So I got the property bug and I was sort of interested in properties, and I was living in not a great house and I was looking to move out. And then the landlord, when he found out I was looking to move out, wanted to sell it. And I thought, oh, this is an opportunity. And it just didn't stack as a deal. Happened to mention it to you. Next thing I know, you're like, I'm buying the house that you live in. I'm gonna be your landlord. You got me into property. I was like probably your first sort of student before you were even teaching. I used to get paid £25 per show that I did. And I was probably doing about 5 shows a week. Very bad. You went from nothing to a multimillionaire. I was thinking I wouldn't be able to buy a house. And you were like, I found your house. You know, I bought it, I hadn't even seen it.
Is it true that you went to visit family around Lichfield and you couldn't find a hotel? You thought, forget this. I'm never gonna have this happen to me again. So you just bought a house.
That's true, yeah.
That's gangster, you know. Firstly, I want to thank you for coming up to be on Winners on a Wednesday.
No problem.
It's very rare that people can listen to you for half an hour or so and just hear the wisdom and what you've done. You went from nothing to a multimillionaire in a relatively short space of time. You're how old now?
33.
You're my elder brother. Yeah. And we're also business partners. So why don't you just give a little bit of backstory about what you're doing right now in the property business and how you've made millions of pounds?
Well, right now we're heavily focusing on development. So we've got 8 sites that we're currently building. We've got sites in Leeds. We've got option agreements. We've got Eagle Works, where we're converting 48 apartments. Just put another pre-app in on that same site, actually trying to get an extra 15 apartments on there as well. So a lot of development stuff, really. Making a lot of money from development. Also got a lot of buy-to-let properties, serviced accommodation, HMOs, real sort of mixed bag.
So out of all the different properties that you've done, because you've been involved in a lot of properties in different areas as well, up the north, in the Midlands, and now more recently, mostly in Buckinghamshire and London, what would you say your favorite strategy is and why?
Well, definitely right now, my favorite strategy is development. I think that with development, a lot of people diss landlords, don't they? Landlords are kind of, greedy landlords, take up the housing, et cetera, et cetera. With development, I can't see how you're doing anything other than serving the whole community. We've got a housing shortage that you're helping solve. You're providing housing for people that need it. You're bringing down property prices, if anything, because you're creating more supply. So I just think it's a fantastic...
It's good for the economy.
It's good for everything.
And I think as well with development, you're also talking about not just building houses, but also restoring houses, buying rundown properties, converting them into apartments, or converting them into beautiful family homes.
So if you look at Ribsford and Eagle Works, for example, that are working at the moment, they're 2 buildings that have been abandoned that are going to rack and ruin. Eagle Works is in a city centre. It's a bad look to have abandoned buildings. And returning it, reusing it into housing, I think it's fantastic.
So how did you get into property and what was your first property purchase and when did you buy it?
So you got me into property. I was like probably your first sort of student before you were even teaching. And you were like, dude, you got to get into property.
More like, you know, in family, when you do something good, and we do this in our family, when someone's onto something, they drag all the other family members into it. And now everybody in our family, sisters, siblings, in-laws, you know, wives,
our family. Well, for example, everyone's moved to Buckinghamshire.
Yes.
Our family is very like that. If one of us goes to the gym, suddenly everyone goes to the gym.
So I was more like the passionate brother that was learning along the way, but just like, dude, come and join me in this.
You were, and I was kind of interested, but I wasn't doing particularly well financially at the time. I was working for Dad. I used to get paid £25 per show, and I was probably doing about 5 shows a week. But I was about £600-700 a month.
Very bad.
Pretty poor.
Yeah.
I mean, with inflation and stuff now, it's still terrible, but it's not quite as terrible as it
was. It's probably the equivalent to about £1,200-1,300 a month, probably. Minimum wage. Yeah. And I was saying to you, you need to get into property. What did you think? Did you think, are you nuts? Why are you trying to get me to buy a house? I can't even.
Well, I was thinking I wouldn't be able to buy a house. And you were like, found your house. I remember it.
Oh, did I find it yet?
You found me the house.
Oh, wow.
I bought it, I hadn't even seen it.
No, I didn't even remember that.
Yeah.
And I structured it as a no money down deal.
I got a loan from Sheila for the money.
Yeah.
So it wasn't making me any profit.
And you also got a high mortgage on it.
Yeah, 90% mortgage. Got a loan for the rest of the deposit.
Consent to let,
and then I was paying it off. And the rent was covering paying back Sheila and paying back the mortgage.
Yeah.
And I made about £50 a month. But then I spent that. I didn't even know what ground rent was or service charge. Like, they got into, because it's a leasehold, Masonette, and they got in touch with me and they were like, you owe us, well, it's not very much, it's about £300 for the year. And I was like, for what? like, it's my house. And they were like, no, for the service charge. I don't, for, I was like reading through, like, sorting the leaves. Just don't sort my leaves.
I remember you ringing me up and saying, do I have to pay this service charge? Or is it like the service when you go out for a meal and they put an extra service charge? And I was like, no, you have to pay.
Is this optional? Like, can I go and clean my own leaves?
Yeah.
Oh, we're painting the door this year. What? I didn't want you to paint my door. But, yeah. You know,
but that's what, in an apartment, it's a leasehold property. And unless you have the freehold, you're going to have to pay a service charge.
I realise that now, yeah. But at the time, I didn't. So my £50 profit basically went on the service charge. But I mean, I've had that property now about 12, 13 years.
So you've been in property for, you know, over a decade.
Over a decade now. And the same tenant, still there.
Wow.
All that time. I haven't changed the tenant. It's just, and the brilliant.
Property, and the property presumably has gone up a lot in value.
I've refinanced it, pulled all my...
Your money.
Or my money.
Paid the investors back, got a new
mortgage. I'd already paid it off, actually. Yeah. So I just pulled a load of money out.
So that was your first deal, and it was a no money down deal.
It was.
It wasn't super profitable. What happened next?
So then I started getting involved in HMOs. I started managing other people's HMOs. I set up the Quick Move, which is an HMO management company.
Which is quite a successful letting agency.
It was good. It was good. I mean, I was making most of my money from entertainment at the time. I had an entertainment agency. Mm. But I sort of realised, I mean, we used to coach one another. And we used to like meet up once a week. I don't know if you can remember. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, of course.
We used to meet up once a week. And then we'd go, right, what are you doing with your business? What am I doing with my business? And we'd sort of like bounce ideas off. And we were all, the whole way through, we were making a very similar amount of money. But what I realised is I was working a lot harder than you. Mm. Like all your money was just sort of turning up at your house. And even though I had a business and I had staff at the time as we were growing, I was like working like really hard and you weren't. And I was like, he's making really good money and doing very little with the property stuff.
Yeah, and just to defend myself a little bit.
Yeah.
At this point, I was full time at Barber College.
Yeah.
I was also doing charity trips across the world.
I'm not saying you were just dossing around on a beach or lazy. I'm just saying the money that was coming in, you weren't doing very much work.
Right.
And a lot of it was passive. And although I was making similar money to you, I was kind of probably didn't tell you this at the time, but a little bit jealous of how it was coming in. So that made me want to get into property more. Want to look at strategies like serviced accommodation.
But talk about the house that your landlord offered you. You know the story.
Yeah, so I got the property bug and I was sort of interested in properties. And I was living in a not a great house at the time. And I was looking to move out. And then the landlord, when he found out I was looking to move out, wanted to sell it. And I thought, ooh, this is an opportunity. Looking to sell off market. Because he hasn't sold it yet. So I went in, had a chat with him. And he told me how much he wanted for it. And it just didn't stack as a deal. You know, I was working out my return on investment. I did all the figures. I thought, nah, this deal doesn't work. And I happened to mention it to you in passing.
I remember.
Oh, he's up for sale. It doesn't work as a deal.
He's off market. He tried to sell it to me. It didn't really work.
And you were like, oh, it could be interesting. I was like, nah, bro. It's not interesting. It's off market. And you were like, okay, fair enough. Next thing I know, you're like, I'm buying the house that you live in.
I'm going to be your landlord.
Well, I moved out before that happened. But you're like, I'm buying this. And I was like, mate, it doesn't stack, bro. You know, and you're like, yeah, but I'm not paying anything for it. It's on a lease option agreement. I was like, what? And I was like, wow, you know, when you realise there are these strategies like the lease option agreement that you did, and I think it's knowing the strategies and being aware for the opportunities. When you're aware of lease options, when you're aware of what would work as service accommodation, what would work as a commercial conversion for development, and you know, you start seeing these opportunities everywhere. I'm sure you've noticed as well in Beaconsfield, you know, all banks are closing.
Yeah, I have.
And I'm like, could these be flats?
Yeah.
You know, especially the one on the Barclays. I'm like, okay, so there's definitely opportunities there, but if you don't know, you don't see it.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that you know about lease options, you know about serviced accommodation, HMOs, BRRs, so you can spot these opportunities when you're out and about.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So you saw me buy your landlord's house.
Yeah.
The thing is, I always see when someone's trying to sell the house, but they're also got it on for rent, that's when I see an opportunity. Well, a lease option agreement, because they want to sell it, but they don't need the money now because they're happy to rent it. So I say, well, hang on, why don't I just take it off your hands? I'll buy it off you in 7 years' time. And in the meantime, I'll give you a small peppercorn rent. You've got released from the property, because usually those people are tired landlords, aren't they? People are just sick of the house.
Yeah.
And that's what I did with your landlord. And he sold it to me and I still own it. And ironically, I think I've got still the same tenants. And that was years ago. What did you think when you looked at my business plan and you saw all the rents that had coming in? Because I wasn't, like when I was like 21, 22, I was at Barber College full time. I was also running Training Kings. which was taking up a lot of my time. So I wasn't super busy on my property business, but I was making about, what, $6,000-$7,000 a month in rent when I was about 21.
You've got to remember where we came from as well. So, you know, we were, I don't think at that stage either of us were particularly, we wanted to be successful. We enjoyed it. We had the bug for property, but I don't think either of us had aspirations to be like a multimillionaire or to live where we live now and to drive the cars. For me, I would see a new build estate, house, three bed, and I was like, oh, it's my dream home. I remember you telling me that the Range Rover Evoque was your dream car.
Yeah, our dream was to live on the Turnberry.
Yeah.
In Bloxwich. And we'd see these detached three-bed houses that were worth about $250,000. And we'd be like, man, when we're in our 40s and 50s, imagine if we can live on that estate in Bloxwich.
Yeah. That's why I kind of think vision boards. I think vision boards are good and stuff. But like, I don't think you have to have the vision now. Your situation changes very, very quickly. So why don't I have long-term goals? Because how the hell do I know what I want to be doing in 10 years' time? Look what we were doing 10 years ago. I think you want to be doing short-term goals and just doing it really, really quick. Because you're always moving, and the world's changing as well. Everything's changing all the time. So it's sort of adapting to that.
Are entrepreneurs born or are they made?
I believe that they are made. I read a very good book by a guy called Matthew Syed, who was called Bounce. And Bounce is about the myth of talent and the sort of the facts, I suppose, of hard work and putting the hard work in. I think some of it's personality. I think a big thing is risk taking. I've always been a big risk taker, even when I was broke. So I remember when I was working for Dad, I was probably earning about $1,000 at this stage a month, and Anna was working for Marks & Spencer's, and she hated it. Hated the people, hated the, you know, some of the, not all the people, but hated a lot of the people, the managers and stuff, hated it. And she was just miserable there. And I was like, fuck it, just leave. And she was like, well, what about the money? I was like, we'll figure it out. We'll figure something out. If you hate it, just leave. And I've always been a big believer in that. I would never put myself in a situation where I was stuck being miserable just because I need the money. Yeah. I'd rather just sort it, figure it out later. So I think risk-taking is a big thing. And I think that's, it's difficult to teach someone to become a risk-taker because you either are or you aren't.
Yeah.
But I definitely think you can learn to be a business owner. I think you can learn to be an entrepreneur. I think you can learn the skills.
You have always loved my property business, and we're now business partners, and we do all of our property deals together, and we've been extremely successful because I think you've got a real skill for systemization. And when I got to my property business to a certain point, I think when we partnered, I was at that point, because that was only, what, about four years ago or so?
So 5 years ago.
5 years ago. So at that point, you know, I was a millionaire, and I was making pretty good money, and you partnered with me on the property stuff and that, but you did try and get me to quit doing training.
I did.
You didn't want me doing YouTube videos. You didn't want me doing training. You didn't want me doing any coaching. And you're very passionate about that as well. And, you know, it's since then, it's not like I told you so moment, but, you know, together we've grown a massive training business and it's the biggest property training company in the UK. Why did you try and get me to not do training? And do you, looking back, think that you were wrong?
No, I don't think I was right or wrong. I think there's sort of two aspects to business. So first of all, I think one is how much you enjoy it, your mission, your purpose, as well as is it making money. I think there's different aspects to take into consideration. And for me, training wasn't really that. I mean, I do a little bit of training and stuff, but it's not like, oh, I have to get out there and I'd do it. If it was free, I'd still want to do it. You know, do you know what I mean? Like, if I wasn't getting paid. Whereas for you, I think you were happy to do it when you weren't getting paid.
Well, I wasn't getting paid.
Well, you were running Training Kings, which is like networking and stuff. And I remember sitting down looking at you with you, and I was like, dude, this business will never make any money. You know, the way that you're running it. And you were like, yeah, man, but it's what I want to do. It's what I believe in. It's what I want to help people do that. I was like, when you said that, I thought, fair enough. You know, if that's your thing, fair enough. But I didn't think it was going to ever make any money. The other thing is, I think it's very hard to systemize when people are buying you. So like with you, you're the trainer. They come to see you. It's not like a product that you can sell. So it's very hard to systemize it.
It's like, a service, isn't it? Really?
But it's not even just a service. So my entertainment business was a service. They weren't buying Russell Leeds. They were buying the entertainment agency, and therefore I could send different entertainers, and I could systemize it, right? It didn't matter if Russell Leeds didn't answer the phone, it didn't matter if Russell Leeds didn't go to the events. With you and the way you run your training business, it's all about Samuel Leeds, and when people come, they want a piece of you, and I was just thinking long term, if everyone's taken from you, it's quite a lot.
And it's the only business that we've not systemized.
Well, we can't systemize it because yeah. they want you.
And I do give my time up and I spend a lot of time mentoring and training.
But if you love it, you know, people say if you enjoy it, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
I just think you need to be careful because at times I think you do too much. So I think it's just a bit of a balancing act. But I'm very happy with the training business now and the way that we're running it.
Yeah, and I think that training is a business where if you do it for the money, you're going to end up lasting 6 months. Whereas if you do it because you're very successful and you genuinely want to help people and even the playing field, of course it's a business.
Yeah.
You know, we charge, we do a lot of our stuff for free. And again, you were like, you need to charge for the crash course and it's nuts. I'm like, all right, compromise. Is a pound. you know, but I think for me, it's a mission. And I think you've seen part of that mission. You've been out to Uganda a lot and you've seen the success students and also not just the fulfillment from that, but you partner a lot with the students. So we train people. Mm. Talk a little bit about like property pitch.
Well, some of the perks actually of running a training business that you don't really think about is you do get loads of opportunities, loads of joint venture opportunities. Everyone wants to work with you. Everyone wants to pass you deals, invest with you. So from a networking point of view, it's very good. Yeah, property pitch was fun. Some people said to me, like, oh, look, you guys are trying to be like dragging it. I was like, genuinely, that is how we would actually be if someone was pitching us a deal. We weren't trying to be anything.
It wasn't a show. We genuinely were doing it and we just thought we might as well film it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously the dramatic music, we wouldn't play that when they walked in. but how we were and that's the sort of questions that we'd ask, and we obviously went out and looked at the deals. That was fun. I enjoyed that. It was.
How do you spend your money? Because you make a lot of money.
So I like cars. So I've got two very nice cars that cost quite a lot of money.
What do you drive?
I drive a G-Wagon and a Porsche Taycan.
Nice.
So I've got one that's very environmentally friendly and one that I think it evens the playing field. It evens itself out.
Same as me though, right? I've got my autobiography Range Rover, and then yeah. I've got my Mercedes, which is electric.
That's true. So yeah, but very similar.
Is it for the environment, or is it just because it's tax deductible? Maybe for another day.
But it's just a good car. So everything. So I like that. I also like eating out. I spend quite a lot of money on sort of food experiences.
When we were younger, we couldn't afford to eat out, and now we can't afford it in a different way.
Mate, I know. Tell me about it. So it's you're a bad influence on me when it comes to food, for sure.
What is it that drives you? Because we will often say this, like we might make £1 million on a deal and we're like, oh my God, that's amazing. But actually it doesn't affect our everyday lives. We don't go, we made £1 million profit last week, so let's pay ourselves more this month. As we pay ourselves a salary from our property business. And even if we have a back, like during COVID, when we first went into lockdown, it was a bit like crap because what's going on? But we just consistently got our property
It didn't
salary.
Actually affect us.
No, it didn't.
From a personal point of view.
No, it didn't. So what is it that drives you? Because it's certainly not. I mean, you know, yes, we enjoy nice things, but we don't spend. I mean, if you don't mind me asking, how much do you pay yourself as a salary?
So I've worked this out actually recently because it's we're having to work out the tax sort of situation and yeah. everything like that. So taking everything into consideration, it's about £500,000 a year.
Okay. But technically, your salary is probably only 12 and a half grand.
My salary, there's dividends and there's perks and other stuff. But yeah, if you factor it all in and work it out as if I was an employee that was getting taxed, that's getting yeah. taxed on, that's how much it would cost.
Would you have ever thought 10 years ago that you'd be paying yourself a salary of £500,000 a year?
No, I wouldn't.
Do you think that's a bit greedy?
No.
Well, how do you justify it?
Because very simply, actually, similar to you being, you know, a Christian and very much a case of when we were growing up, it was don't be greedy, don't take too much. But I just made a commitment to give a percentage of everything that I earn to charity and to good causes.
What is that percentage?
So it's 10%.
So everything that you make, you give 10% of the profits away.
Yeah.
And then you think, well, the more I'm making myself, the more I'm giving away. And growing up, I remember that, like, remember when we used to sleep on the floor with some pretty poor...
We didn't have carpets for years, do you remember?
Yeah, we didn't grow up wealthy. What do you think, why do you think we've both been so successful just from a normal, regular working family home?
I don't really quite know. I can't quite put my finger on what it was. I don't know whether... I don't think we got given a lot. Dad, I think, was very hard on us and put us in difficult situations, like working for him as an entertainer. When I was 16, I was shy. I don't know whether that helped. I also don't think we were ever given anything. We had to manage our own money, even when we were teenagers. We had to buy our own clothes. We were given £10 a week And then that was for our pocket money and our clothes and anything we wanted. We got given nothing. So we learned how to manage our money and stuff from an early age as well.
Yeah.
We both worked hard, both had multiple paper rounds when we were children and did other entrepreneurial activities. Like even, do you remember when we were living in Perth, and so we must have been 7, I was, and you were probably 5, and going out washing people's cars,
yeah,
taking a bucket and sponge. I remember people paying us to clean their wheel. They were like, don't wash the car, but just wash the wheels.
Here's 20 pence.
And I'll give you 50p. And we're like, sucker. Like, but actually, it's because he doesn't want his car wrecked.
It really has been really compassionate.
Really compassionate.
To a 5 and 7 year old.
But even then, we were hungry for it, weren't we? Like, why would a 5 year old want to go washing cars?
Because we had nothing, maybe. We weren't given anything.
Well, maybe.
Who knows? Are you worried about the property market? Because I know a few years ago, when we first started really killing our property business, you and I had a conversation with Grant Cardone, and we said that, you know, what happens if it all goes away? What happens if the market changes like drastically? And that was a little bit of a concern. Do you ever worry that the market might massively change? I mean, it has, it is, with interest rates. And does that ever worry you?
Not really, for a few reasons. I think it's pretty much accepted that they go up over time. So they go up and down and up and down, but overall they're going up. So let's say the property prices drop right now. All that means is we can't sell them and we're going to have to wait for them to go back up. I don't think, I still think they'll go back up. I don't think, it's not like Bitcoin, we don't know. We might put our money into Bitcoin and it drops to nothing. That's not going to happen. It's land, it's bricks and mortar, it's a physical asset. So I'm not worried about that.
You're not worried about your net worth shrinking because you know that it's in bricks and mortar?
It might shrink.
A bit.
And then it will go back up again.
Okay.
So all it means is when it shrinks, it'd be a bad time to sell it, but it'd be a good time to buy more.
Right.
It's shrinking.
Which is what we're doing right now.
Exactly. I've just been on some viewings today.
What about rents though? What about interest rates going up, commercial properties dropping in rental value? Talk to me a bit about super rents.
Number one, commercial properties dropping is another opportunity, right? So that's not a worry. In fact, if anything, that's a... Ooh. Exciting.
Right.
Super rent, we talk about service accommodation, HMOs. The properties that we're renting out, if we were doing it as a buy-to-let, then yeah, I might be a bit concerned that I might be losing a bit of money on individual properties, whatever. But like, if we take, for example, what I bought recently, the house in Lichfield, I mean, I made $3,000 profit last month.
And it's a tiny house.
And it would be renting out at £800 a month if it was a normal house.
So hang on. Oh, give me the figures on that little house, because that's just one that you did because it was an emotional... You just like, oh, I like that house. And Anna happened to say, I'd like to be able to stay in Lichfield. Is it true that you went to visit family around Lichfield, and you went to stay in Lichfield, and you couldn't find a hotel, and you thought, forget this, I'm never going to have this happen to me again. So you just bought a house in Lichfield for you, really?
That's true, yeah.
What? That's gangster, you know. I mean, going to a city and being like, oh, I can't get a hotel, this is annoying. Oh well, we'll buy a house. Like, that is gangster.
I didn't know for sure whether it was going to work, a service. So what I was thinking is, I'll buy it, then I can use it whenever we want.
Bit of a second home.
But it's got loads of cupboards and stuff, so we can store all our stuff there.
Bit of a second cupboards. Sorry. Yeah,
so like, what I mean is, like, if we're traveling, I don't have to take anything with me. It's just there, right? Which I like.
Right.
Because I'm going to think about it. Yeah. Just turn up. And I thought,
who buys a house because there's a lot of cupboards? I thought you were going to say to me, really, you know, the area's right near the cathedral. No, there's a lot of cupboards.
Do you know what? It was the area, though, because it's literally a city, albeit a very small city.
Do you know what I think? Truth is, I think that you've always, when we were broke living in Warsaw, Lichfield was the closest city that was nearby us that was really posh. And I think you've secretly always wanted to live in Lichfield.
I have lived in Lichfield. We used to live in Lichfield.
Yeah, it wasn't really Lichfield though, was it?
I was just on the outside of Lichfield.
Anyway, go on, tell me about the house.
It rents out really, really well. Oh, ironically, we don't use it that much now. We used it quite a bit.
How much are the mortgage payments? Interest?
Interest is $799.
So you're paying $799 a month, and then you're renting, how much profit are you making generally every month on it?
So, I mean, last month was a really good month. I made about $3,000.
What would you normally make?
Profit. Normally about grand and a half.
But if you did that as a single let, you'd make no profit.
But that's also including to pay off the mortgage. It's not interest only.
Oh, so you made $3,000 last month and you're also paying the mortgage back slowly as well. Oh, mate, that's awesome. So it's more than $3,000 then.
So, well, that was last month. Normally I'll probably make a grand and a half.
Yeah, and then you're paying down the mortgage slowly. And also with interest rates, We fixed them, didn't we, just before the interest
we
rates
did,
went up.
But even if the interest rates doubled, oh no, I'm only making a grand.
This is why I think you're such a good business partner to work with, because you're constantly always looking at solutions rather than problems. Yep. So you're always looking at, if the house prices drop, you go, great time to buy, everyone's scared. You know, so you're always seeing the opportunities, not seeing the problems. And also, I'm always predicting. What do you think? How freaky are my predictions? Because every time I predict something's about to happen in the property market, come on.
Well, we had a conversation about a year ago, and you were saying, I want to work out the mortgage interest rates at 6%. And I'm like, dude, 6%. I mean, like, come on. It's never going to be.
You were like, 6%. Next year. Maybe if it's in 5 years or, but next year. 6%.
You were like, mate.
Interest
Mate,
rates
I'm
are
telling you, it's going to go up to 6%. I was like, it's not going to go up to 6%. And you were right.
Yeah, always right. What is your vision for the future?
You know, I'm like really happy with everything that we're doing now. I always want to grow and improve. Vision for the future, I mean, I'd love to have a development company that was, I mean, really, we're toying in development. You know, when you compare us to people like, you look at the big boys, Taylor, like everything else we've ever done, I've always been like one of the best. We're definitely not one of the best development companies. There are people out there that are killing it, right? We're just small fry at the moment in the world of development. So I'd love to have a development company that was sort of systemized, turning out, you know, doing loads of big sites, going like Taylor Wimpey or someone like that. I mean, that would be.
The thing is, it's all about who you compare yourself to, isn't it? Like, our family look at us and they see, like, you know, oh, you made £1 million last month on that deal. You just bought a piece of land and got planning and made 1.3 million. Oh, you're like the most successful people ever. But then you're saying, yeah, we're a really small fry. It just shows how big you are as a thinker.
Yeah, I think it's a massive industry, though. Like when I look at the entertainment industry that we're in, for example, we were the biggest.
Well, we've got the biggest training company.
We're the biggest training company. I'm used to being the biggest. Development, we're not.
And it pisses you off?
It doesn't piss me off. I'm very happy with what we're doing. I think we're doing really well. But it just, I'm like, wow, there's so much room for growth.
What would be your final words of wisdom and advice for people watching this that want to maybe get into property?
I would say, I think property is the best investment. If you look at the Sunday Times Rich List, and you can actually search by category, and you can see, I think it's 40% of them are in property. I think it's a fantastic industry. I think now is a brilliant time. My biggest advice would be learn all the different strategies and have your eyes open. So you're in there, you've got a toolbox ready to use when you can spot the opportunities. Don't be afraid to take risks and think big.
Russell, thank you for a very valuable, interesting interview.
Thank you very much.